What does a ghost look like? Is it a smoky shape in the dark, a seemingly normal person standing in the room? Only you know that person is dead. Or is it some ethereal, translucent, human-like shape in the dark? Maybe a blood-stained face staring back at you in the mirror? No. A ghost looks like a person covered in a white bedsheet with eye cutouts. At least that's what the people of Hammersmith in London believed in the early 1800s when a ghost began terrifying its citizens. It only ended when someone killed the ghost, not with an exorcism or incantations, but with a gun. This is the story of the Hammersmith ghost.
Hi. Welcome to the first Hello Weird World episode for Spooky Season 2024. I'm Carrie.
I'm Emma.
I'm Dean. And yes, finally, Hallow Weird World. God damn it. Hallow Weird World.
Hallow Weird World.
2024 begins. This is a ghost story, kind of a ghost story. It's a little bit of a ghost story, as you can tell from the title of the episode, but not in a super traditional way. This is a ghost story that actually has a trial for murder.
Oh,
so, I was going to say, I don't think you can kill ghosts by shooting them. But
that's a great point. Apparently everyone did, though, for centuries. Yeah, no.
Really?
I mean, let's start there. Have you ever heard of ghost impersonation or ghost hoaxing?
I mean, in
Scooby-Doo episodes.
That's true.
Not in real life.
Well, in real life, apparently this is a thing. It's kind of a weird history of ghost hoaxing. I'll start with that. It's like
ghost hoaxing five times.
Ghost
fast.
Hoaxing? I can do it. I'm going to say it a lot. I'm going to say ghost hoaxing a lot, okay? It does has a kind of a rich history, at least in England and Australia, from what I can read. One historian named Owen Davies, he actually tracked ghost hoaxing. I'm nailing that phrase so far, by the way. In England, back to the 1500s.
Jesus.
Wow. I know.
That's a long time ago.
That was when the country was having kind of its break with Catholicism at the time and entering the world of Protestantism. I can't say that word even once.
Protestantism.
The anti-Catholics at the time accused the church of impersonating ghosts, apparently to show that souls lost in purgatory would like wander the world in limbo. Like, oh, look, ghost. Oh, okay, we know why they're ghosts. They weren't Catholic enough.
Right.
That was kind of the idea. Supposedly one priest tied candles to crabs and then set the crabs loose, like skittering in, I don't know, in some room or something about to imitate lost souls on a dark night.
That sounds like a fire hazard.
Yeah.
It does sound like a fire hazard. It also sounds like, how do you tie candles to crabs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like, I mean,
not possible.
Maybe not possible, but if it did happen, I really respect the diligence.
I mean, if I tried it, the candles would just flop all over the place.
I don't know. Maybe on little wheels.
You'd have to hot glue them onto the shelves.
And I don't think they had hot glue back then.
They did. They're called candles.
Wax. Yeah.
So but not the same. Doesn't hold the
I don't
same
know.
Way.
Yeah, the thing, I think it said it tied a string to candles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
They'd
no.
go out. Well, anyway, imagine the visuals. Cool.
Yeah. For sure. In my head, it looks super cool.
The more common practice was for people to dress up like a ghost and then kind of, you know, jump scare some unfortunate person along a dark alley or in a churchyard, especially like a church. Because back then, churchyards always had graves. They had cemeteries pretty much all the time. Churches.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a great place to do this kind of ghost impersonation at the time. So why do that? I mean, okay, let me ask you this. How do you dress up like a ghost? Which I kind of teased at the beginning.
A sheet over your head.
A sheet with two eye holes.
How do you think these folks dressed up like a ghost?
A sheet over their head.
They indeed did. I don't know if...
But to pass off as a real ghost.
As a real, actual ghost. The whole white bedsheet or shroud or something like that with eye cutouts was how most of these folks dressed up to impersonate ghosts.
People were less sophisticated than they are now, I suppose.
There is, though, some history behind this of why. Throughout the Middle Ages, into the 19th century, most people were not buried in coffins. Something left for the rich, maybe the upper middle class, something like that.
So they were just freeballing it?
They were freeballing it, so to speak, yes.
Wrapped in a sheet, probably.
They were wrapped in a shroud, yeah.
Oh.
Often it was the shroud that you were laying in and covered with when you were dead. You were laid out, you'd die, and they'd just knot at the top, maybe knot it at the bottom, and throw your ass in your grave. That was it.
Why don't we go back to that?
Economic.
Yeah.
Coffins are incredibly expensive.
Yes.
They're so dumb.
Yeah. I don't want to be buried in a coffin.
You're probably more biodegradable if
you're
just...
For sure. We need to go back to, if you're going to be buried at all, which you shouldn't
which
be.
Which I'm not going to be, but.
You should be.
Unless that's what they want to do with me at the body farm or wherever I go.
Yeah, Carrie's almost a little too eager to be part of the body
she's
farm.
She's really excited to be.
Yeah, it's like she's looking forward to it in a weird way. It's not right. So that became a pretty obvious way if you wanted to imitate a dead person where you wore the shroud that they were mostly buried in.
Yeah.
So it became the go-to costume for ghost impersonators. As far back as 1584, a member of parliament named Reginald Scott wrote disgustedly how, quote, one knave in a white sheet hath cozened and abused many thousands that way. That is dressing up as a ghost in a white sheet. Mm-hmm. You're probably wondering what cozened means.
Yeah.
It means to deceive or trick someone.
Oh.
So think about it. We could be screaming, cousin or sweet meat to people when they open the door on Halloween, if not for trick or treat. Yes, okay. I did look up an old word for treat, meaning candy. Yeah, that was sweet meat. So cousin was, you said, is like, it meant trick.
Okay.
So I think we should go trick or treating and yell cousin or sweet meat at people in the door and see if we get.
Okay.
Dad,
you want to go trick-or-treating?
I do. I really do.
This isn't the first time he's brought it up either. So yes, he does want to go trick-or-treating.
I want to bring you kids go trick-or-treating. I want mom and I to wait at the sidewalk.
You want to take your 27,
23-somethings,
25,
go up to a door and go trick-or-treat and see get candy. And then when you guys come back, we're going to say, did you say thank you? And you're going to turn back and say, well, thank you.
That is really funny.
That would be phenomenal. People would be like disgusted.
The confusion.
Confused. Yeah. I bet they'd still give us candy, though.
They probably would.
He also thinks you're the only one who would go for it.
Yeah, I don't see Jack and Aaron doing that.
No, they would not.
They take themselves too seriously.
No, they just don't. They just wouldn't think it's funny.
How is that not funny? That can't not be funny.
I'm a theater kid, so I would do it as like an acting experience.
Yeah, yeah. And do like a kid's voice.
Thank you, mister.
Oh, my God. So much. Oh, full-size Milky Ways. No way. So. Ghost hoaxing did not stop, though, with the English Reformation. Owen Davies found accounts throughout the 1600s into the 1700s. One unknown impersonator in Westminster, quote, struck such terror into the credulous inhabitants thereabouts that those who could not be brought to believe it a ghost entered into a subscription to give 5 guineas to the person who would seize him. In other words, they bountied this person, because so some people would, throughout this whole time, it seems like some people thought it was a real ghost. Whenever a ghost hoax or a ghost impersonator was terrorizing some village, other people thought, no, that's some dickhead. Let's get him. Let's capture him. Let's send out, let's put a bounty on his head. And
is that what a subscription is?
A subscription just means you, gather money for some good cause. It'd be an early form of
Netflix.
Of what?
Netflix.
No, not No. The thing where you raise money online.
GoFundMe.
It's the GoFundMe of the day.
I don't know.
It wasn't always just to scare people, though. People were dressing up like ghosts. Often is to trick people out of their hard-earned cash, baby.
It was a grift
and actually a crime. A criminal named Thomas Wilmot. He was a highwayman of like the mid to late 1600s. He would put on a ghost costume, the sheet over his head. In this case, I think he left his head exposed and he chalked his head, his face. He chalked his face, white sheet over him. Looks like a ghost. So I guess he then jumped into a little gambling den where people were playing poker or whatever, some card game. And everybody got scared shitless of this ghost who just jumped into the room. They all fled. What did he do? Scooped up all the cash on the table and took the hell off.
Okay.
He would later be executed in 1670. Not for that, for murder.
He murdered someone?
Yes. He also was a misogynist. He piece of shit. He attacked women.
Oh.
So maybe you thought you liked him. No. It's 1670. Early. By the mid 1700s, there were enough rogues in sheets prowling around cemeteries at night that locals would often raise money. The whole bounty thing became pretty commonplace by then. The shenanigans, though, were not always cost-free. There were consequences sometimes. A hoaxer in Essex in 1792, he jumped out, did a jump scare of a farm worker on driving a wagon that was going by, I guess, some lonely rural road, I imagine. The horses got so spooked by him, though, that they flipped the wagon. And it was a very heavily loaded wagon farm stuff. I don't know. I'm going to say hay bales. Okay, we're in the back, something bales. Like that. Maybe some alfalfa, some oats. I don't know. And the wagon wheel, one of the wagon wheels, like either landed on or ran over the driver's leg.
Wow.
And it maimed him terribly, bad enough where he eventually died of that injury. This is, you know, 1700s. Yeah. You died of, if you were badly injured, you were going to great die. Chance you're going to die.
Yeah.
So that was not, that wasn't funny.
No. He took that one too far.
Way too far. Well, he didn't know this, the ghost, the horses were being such wussies, I guess.
No, you could easily anticipate
that's true.
That you're going to spook a horse.
That's true. Yeah,
no.
You don't fuck around with wagons.
Don't fuck around with wagons. That's, you know, that's an old saying, but I'm glad you're bringing it back. That's good. Sometime in the 1830s, and yes, whenever we have a story with an imprecise date like that, we should be a little worried about it, but still, I'll tell you anyway. A ghost impersonator spooked an 81-year-old woman, and yeah, she died. She had a heart attack.
Also a very bad idea.
Don't scare ghosts. Don't scare horses. Don't scare ghosts either, because they will scare you back.
Yeah.
But 81-year-old, dude.
Yeah, come on. It's a miracle she's even alive back then.
It sure was. You know she had.
Yeah, that's like 120 in this. Yeah. That's like, today's ages.
That's like a million.
That's what I say. 120 is the new 80. People are saying that, according to Kurt.
People are saying that.
Mm-hmm. He was tried for manslaughter. But what I read didn't mention any outcome, so I don't know what happened to him. In 1844, six men chased down a ghost hoaxer and beat the shit out of him.
God damn.
Sent him to the hospital. So it was a little bit dangerous sometime.
Super mad.
Yeah.
Almost that same thing happened in 1888 when, again, a ghost guy, he's impersonating a ghost. The village guy, instead of like, oh, I'm scared, they chased him. 50 people in this village chased after him, brandishing sticks. Back then, sticks were a weapon.
Yes.
I imagine pretty, they say sticks. I imagine they're pretty sturdy, not like literally little poke.
Well, no, stick, that's, you know, a twig.
Okay. So
enough people hit you with a stick. That's going to hurt.
Sure.
Really bad.
50 of them.
50 sticks?
So they surround him, they corner him, they surround him, and they're about to wallop him. And I guess he said, hey, wait, don't hit me. Why don't I give money to a local infirmary to make up for my bad deeds? They thought about it. The crowd said, you know what? And the crowd said, you know what? We accept your offer. And they let him go.
That's a really judicious crowd.
Yeah. It is. It's England. Very law oriented. Yeah. You know, well, so it's a good point you make.
All right.
Okay. You did indeed find yourself. The shenanigans, as I mentioned, though, were not always so innocent as in, well, I guess stealing money wasn't all that innocent, was it? No. But, you know, mostly just scaring people.
But some were much
right?
more nefarious.
Yes. Many ghost impersonators did it for pretty unsavory reasons. Often it was about molesting women.
I knew you were going there.
I can tell from your looks that you did. Women were very frequently the target. Even to be scared, it was often women.
Yeah.
They screamed much higher pitched. Although I've heard some men scream pretty high. I did once when I thought it was a cockroach in my
you
hand.
You would scream at a cockroach.
Because Todd put a fake cockroach next to me, and I didn't know it. I screamed pretty high.
In the food court of a mall, as I recall.
No, it was piercing. Really? Everyone looked.
You were probably there.
I don't remember. I assume this is in 1986.
I'm still a little scarred.
No, it was up here.
Yeah,
it was after we moved here. Mm-hmm, yeah. So.
Damn.
I'm not over it. So these included like just mostly to harass them, humiliate them, but even included sexual assault under, you know, with a ghost sheet
Why
on.
Yeah. Are men so consistently
horrible?
Horrid.
Awful. Yeah. They just
What
they,
the freak?
They for sure are.
Yeah. Well.
It's just a.
You see a white sheet and you think, let me use that to attack women.
I don't know there's any context where white sheets are good. I think there's some context where they can argue they're much, much worse.
Oh, Lord.
So maybe it was due to exported criminals. I don't know. But the ghost fad seemed to have gone from England to Australia. So it kind of dies out in the 1800s. But that's about when Australia starts having a bunch of ghost hoaxers. Mm-hmm. In late 1800s, all the way up to about World War I, when it fizzled out then because they all were sent off to fight and die in Europe. And
so you're saying women weren't participating
It was not 100% men, but yes, it's overwhelmingly male dominated occupation, question mark.
Pastime.
Yeah.
Hobby.
Victoria, the state of Victoria in the southeast of the country, suffered through a series of incidents by a person that they dubbed the, quote, Wizard Bombardier. Ooh. This was in 1882. This person, This person wore white robes and a, quote, sugarloaf hat. One of you is going to have to tell me what the hell a sugarloaf hat is.
You didn't look it up?
I did not look it up. I forgot
a
to look it up.
A sugar what?
Sugarloaf hat.
Sugarloaf
hat. I imagine, is it like a chef's hat kind of a thing? And if so, why would you wear that to portray a ghost?
Yeah.
Confused? But he would rush at people screaming in this getup to, I guess, like confuse them and disorient them. Oh, what the hell? You're going to have to describe that. I'm assuming it's white. So this is white. The one you're showing me is black, but it was like,
it's like a witch hat.
It's comical, like a witch hat. It's like a silly witch's hat.
It's not quite as pointy.
Oh, yeah, witch hats have brims.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of cute.
Carrie wants to get one.
I think I might get one.
Thinking about wearing
it. She's really into it.
But it would hide your purple hair, and everybody loves your purple hair.
Carrie loves
has purple hair just to get compliments. So he's wearing this.
Some hair will hang down.
This white robe and this sugarloaf hat, and he's scaring the crap out of people by screaming at them, and then he'd throw rocks at them. And then he'd flee because that was what he did.
Okay.
I'm 100%. I don't know what the point of this kind of guerrilla ghosting was, but
I mean, they didn't have a lot of entertainment avenues available to them.
Yeah, that was one of them.
Maybe he's not a big reader. So.
I would actually walk around hoping to be scared by ghost hoaxers.
Yeah, you would.
As long as they didn't throw rocks at me that hard.
True.
Yeah. Or molest me.
Yeah.
I don't want that either.
That would really suck.
So the costumes could be pretty elaborate in Australia, much more than just a white sheet sometimes. In the latter part of the 19th century, one dude or some of them started using phosphorescent paint. This is around when that was invented. So they would slather their sheet or whatever with phosphorescent paint and go around looking like a glowing ghost.
Yeah,
I think that would make it spookier, don't you think?
Yeah. That is freakish.
I'm thinking about Halloween costumes now.
Ooh, a phosphorescent. People have no... I'm the Hammersmith ghost. Oh, of course. No, it was tipping my tongue. I thought
Remember
so.
Remember in 1892?
In Australia? No, nothing? I'm getting... whatever.
So this has nothing to do with Halloween. This is going on at all times of the year.
Okay. Anytime.
It could be March. And it could be you'd see a ghost.
It could be. I'll bet you it's more likely the story we're going to tell about Hammersmith took place in the winter because they could get warm under the shroud. I would guess. One hoaxer in 1895, we're still in Australia, by the way, he dressed up like a knight, an actual knight in armor, and he would have the words, "Prepare to meet thy doom," across his, I imagine, fake armor on his chest.
That's freaky.
He would scare people then by threatening to cut off their heads. And I imagine he also had like a fake axe, maybe. I'm guessing the last one. Another person tied a coffin to their back as if they had kind of like freshly risen from the grave. Like, my coffin's still on me. Woo, spooky, scary. And people would be scared.
These are actual Halloween costumes.
They kind of are, yeah.
Yeah.
A woman pretending to be a ghost would, she'd waltz around a hotel trying to scare the guests there. But she would also had a guitar with her, and she'd play kind of mournful music to, I guess, lend an ambiance to it. So she had a little style.
She was just a performance artist.
But she liked it, like a musical ghost. As in England, though, sometimes these actions did end up badly for the ghost. Take this example from November 27, 1898. It's in an issue of the Australian Sunday Times. It was a newspaper in Sydney. The headline is, we'll put this up on our social media, but the headline was "Thrashing a Ghost." And it talks about how considerable alarm was experienced by timid residents of Connington near Perth at the frequent appearance of what was called a ghost. A number of residents waylaid the apparition, who surrendered on being bailed up by revolver. So they drew a gun at a ghost and said, you know, I don't know, put up your ghost arms, I guess. Has a picture of men pointing a gun with a ghost, literally just a sheet with eye holes. And the costume consisted of a sheet with eyelet holes. This is back to the newspaper. And decorated with red paint and other elaboration. The residents decided not to hand him over to the police, but to administer a sound thrashing with a paling. A piece of wood, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
This was accordingly done, and the ghost set at liberty. So they would, like the ones in England, beat the crap out of you once in a while.
Huh.
Most were thought to be what Australians called larrikins at the time, which is just like young teenagers or young men who would do just stupid things like they do now and forever will.
Yeah.
And no decent people. It's like, oh, obviously people doing this are like lower class, maybe at most working class. They're not, you know, from the better class of society.
Well, you would think after a while it stops being scary.
Because... You would think, well, it would go into spasms and stop for a while and come back again.
Okay.
According to one account, quote, many, if not most of those arrested were in fact, quote, school teachers and clerks and the like, and a small number of middle class women, end quote. So it turns out they were not just, you know, oh, it's poor people. No, In 1904, in Australia, still a hoaxer wore one of those like painted, phosphorescent painted kind of getups. And he also put a top hat on top of it, put a frock coat over it, and he wore some fancy boots, which sounds kind of foppish.
Yeah.
But he also carried a, you ever heard of cat o' nine tails? It's like a nine-piece whip with metal studs in it.
Yeah.
It was a torture device by the Inquisition, I believe. And he would attack women with it, beat them with his cat o' nine tails, which can inflict very serious injuries.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So the people got together and they put a 5-pound bounty for this guy, which in 1895 was not an inconsiderable amount. I don't know.
It was 1904.
What's the exchange rate?
Oh, was it 1904? Yeah, you're right, 1904. I'm going to say that's $7 trillion. And
$400 billion.
So the word gets out, there's a 5-pound bounty on this guy. Next time you see him, catch him and, you know, arrest him. So this person sent a letter to the newspapers and it basically said, anybody who tries to stop me, I'm going to carry a gun. I will shoot you.
Oh.
And he signed it, The Ghost.
Oh, wow.
Despite this, he was arrested.
Good.
Okay.
And surprise, he was an influential government clerk named Herbert McLennan. He was a upper class dude running around pretending to be a ghost, beating women or scoring them with
issues.
Yeah.
He was just a freak.
He was a freak.
The P. Diddy of his era.
He was
if you will.
Also in England, many hoaxers like McLennan were far from innocent pranksters. And again, sometimes they would use it to rob or assault. One person did it to steal eggs. I don't know. Just eggs.
Honestly, that's kind of real. Eggs are expensive. Yeah.
So ghost impersonation was not all fun and games in this kind of weird history. But the incident that had the most lasting impact was in Hammersmith, part of London in 1804. That's what we're going to talk about the rest here. Hammersmith is now a part of Western London. It's kind of like on a really severe bank of the Thames on the north side of it. It's only like 5 miles these days from Buckingham Palace. But back in 1803, 1804, that was like the western edge. Mm. So it wasn't, don't think, you know, urban city even for them. It was like a village essentially on the western edge, and beyond it was completely rural and farms and stuff like that.
What was this? What year was this again?
1803. Okay. We're going to start November of 1803.
Okay.
When Hammersmithians, which I assume they're
naturally
called, began reporting of being scared or even accosted by someone or something in all white clothes that appeared to be a ghost. As you know from the history I gave, that's what people would see that and they say, oh my God,
it's a ghost.
That's a ghost.
Oh, what the flip? That's a ghost.
So apparently there were several incidents of this, just scaring people, you know, appearing in at night. Boo. I don't know if they said boo back then, but, you know, scaring people and even sometimes like chasing after people, something like that, right? So the rumors start circulating. People are scared in Hammersmith and they think, oh, you know what? It's that dude. I can't remember his name, but he slit his throat with a straight razor. Not that long ago.
Sweeney Todd.
It was not Sweeney Todd. I think he slit other people's throat. You know, again, a lot. Your time, you're good at when movies were released. You're bad at all the other
historical times.
Yes. Foolishly, the people of Hammersmith had allowed him to be buried in the churchyard. That's hallowed ground. Suicides are not allowed to be buried in hallowed ground. So they thought, okay, so his soul is wandering earth. There's our ghost, this guy. But even early on, the descriptions of what this ghost looked like started to get weird and kind of widen. So most said, okay, so he's dressed in some kind of like white robes or at least all white clothing. Other witnesses, though, said that he looked like he was dressed in calfskin. I don't know if it was white or not. Some people said there was horns on his head.
Whoa.
Some people say they appeared to have like big glass eyes, like maybe where the eye covers are, there's big glass eyes. So it start to get, you know, you start to see that what happens in these things a lot. You start to see descriptions kind of morph. And again, because your hijinks are always fun until someone gets hurt. Someone got hurt. At first, though, maybe it was slightly inconvenience because the Hammersmith ghost leapt out at a what? Uh-huh. A wagon.
Oh.
Yes.
See? Don't fuck with wagons.
Don't do that. And this one was drawn by 8 horses because it was a big passenger wagon.
There were
16 passengers in that wagon.
That's a big wagon.
I think they're called omnibuses, but essentially they had buses. They had horse-drawn buses.
Wow.
Surprisingly early, or cherubons or something like that. Someone in England told me the hell word I'm screwing up. But
I don't think I've seen one of those.
Kind of like public conveyance in the olden days. Like that, yeah. Hmm. So the driver freaks out, pulls up the horses, and he took the hell off like your boyfriend on Scare Tactics, who just he sees the scary thing, and he just books it into the desert, never to be seen again. Yes, my favorite episode of Scare Tactics with Tracy Morgan.
You just unlocked a childhood memory God. I have not thought about Scare Tactics.
They had them like they always have like an SUV or a van so they can control them. And it was like a boyfriend and girlfriend. And this one, I don't know, something scary showed up at the window of the van or the SUV. And this guy got the door open. And they were like Vegas and just booked in. They're like, no, hold on, wait. And he's gone in the desert.
Abandoned his girlfriend.
Yep. Oh, she's like, yum.
All right.
So that's what this guy did. That's what the driver of this wagon. He just took off. The 16 passengers, they're left behind, mm-hmm. being scared by a ghost. So like I say, it started out maybe just inconvenience, not so much dangerous, but two other incidents were not quite so trivial in Hammersmith. Sometimes these get lumped together, but most of the time the story is told like they're two separate incidents. In one, a pregnant woman was strolling through the churchyard at 10 at night, as you will.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. When a ghost or someone dressed like a ghost emerged from behind a gravestone and scared the crap out of her. She ran. I'm sure she screamed a blood-curdling scream. And she took off. This time, this ghost chased after her and he caught her. And I guess he caught her and he turned her around and he like wrapped his arms around her and kind of grabbed onto her. She naturally did what 1804 women in England would do, which is...
Fainted.
Yes.
For sure.
You put the back of your hand on your forehead. And you go,
And then you melt it slowly and softly to the ground.
Not gingerly. You don't make a sound.
No, you don't suffer a major head injury when your head hits the sidewalk. No. She did that. She fainted dead away, and she was found hours later by what I read, which seems like a long time to be unconscious.
So he just left her there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Ooh. I'm out.
My bad.
Some, I guess, neighbors or passersby, I'm not sure, found her and they brought her back to her senses enough to say, you know, where do you live? And they brought her home. So she took to her sick bed with shock, as you will. Mm-hmm. And again, like people of the 1800s in England, what happens then when you have this terrible shock? You're in your sick bed for like weeks or months. I swear to God. In this case, she never woke up. She died.
What the freak?
No word on what happened to the baby. I don't know how pregnant she was. She was just said to be a pregnant woman. The same fate befell.
What do you mean no word on what happened to the baby?
I don't know what happened to the baby. What if it was like 8.5 months?
They could have post-mortem delivered it.
Yeah.
No, they couldn't have.
Come on, man. Come on. Girl.
Not in 1803. Sure they could have. England, no.
She's dead. They can just cut it out of her. It's like
No, that baby died.
No.
Obviously.
I choose the baby lived.
You think they were doing a ton of C-sections
and
back
that baby
then?
Went
a Tennessee
on
section?
A ton of C-sections.
It did sound like you said Tennessee
sections. It did sound like you said Tennessee sections. And I forever want to call them Tennessee sections.
Is that a medical term I'm unaware of?
Little known fact.
Let's all call cesarean sections Tennessee sections and see if anyone notices or says something.
Anybody even realizes.
Until someone says, what are you saying?
Hold on.
What's up with that? So no, I don't think they did. I don't know if they did a Tennessee section on her or not, but it happened later to under similar circumstances. So that's why I say some people say, oh, they were walking together, but other people say, no, a separate incident. An old lady is walking through the churchyard again, and she also was scared, and she, same thing. She never left her sick bed, and she died because 19th century English people were like rice paper frail when it came to being shocked. I swear to God, I'll think, oh, they had a shock. And usually it's literally there in bed for weeks.
Yeah. There's like an internet joke where it's like, if I were to go back to like Victorian times in England, I would give them like Pop Rocks or like
die.
A Monster energy drink or like meth like to see what happens.
You know, they did opium.
That's true. So their drinks did have cocaine in
here. The Pop Rocks would work.
The Pop Rocks. Oh my God.
Yeah.
They would. The witchcraft.
Yeah.
You'd be for sure killed.
Yeah. You might be put to death if you did that.
Depends on when you went back. Be careful. Don't go too far.
Too far, yeah.
It wasn't just defenseless old women or pregnant women, though. A man named Thomas Groom, he was a brewer's servant or brewer's assistant in Hammersmith. He was walking through the churchyard one night around 9 p.m. So, first of all, I want to point out, why are people out so late? And then they're always out late. They're out at 9, 10, 11. They're just walking around at 9, 10 on weekdays. School day, I mean, they were out so late. And second of all,
you that, sound really old right now.
But no, I mean, yeah, it's always like people just walk.
So late?
We're gonna when we get to it, it's gonna be even later. And it's like, what was happening? Why was she walking home so late? Trust me. And then second, was the churchyard some kind of shortcut to everywhere? Why are these people walking through the graveyard?
It could be in the center of the village.
Okay, well, stop.
Yeah.
You know,
well, stop.
Stop walking through it. Stay out of places where people are buried, unless it's visiting hours.
After the first one or two times this happens, you think people might start avoiding
you would think.
The churchyard after dark.
Is there a ghost terrorizing your village? If the answer is yes, stop walking through your graveyard.
Steer clear.
I mean, it's too late for Hammersmith to learn this lesson, but I hope, listeners, you're learning this lesson. Because I'm concerned about this. Mm-hmm. So,
and
Tom,
don't go out past, what, 7 p.m.?
This was 9 o'clock, and it's going to get later in some other cases. Trust me.
When is the curfew?
For walking along churches? Ooh.
Dark.
I'd say dark, yeah. I don't want to go in no cemetery.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Actually, I have been in a cemetery at night, late at night, and drinking. Obviously.
Why?
Because you do that kind of thing.
No, you don't. Not, I didn't.
This is pre-me.
Of course it is. I was a teenager. Carrie, we just mentioned how teenage males are the stupidest people in the world.
That's
I can attest to that.
I've never perused a graveyard for fun.
It's fun. Tried to scare each other with like told scary stories. Ooh. While we're drinking Lucky Lager.
Oh, Lord.
Terrible, terrible beer. So, 80s. Thomas is waltzing through hallowed ground in the gloomy dark, in the dead of winter in 1803, as you will, again.
As you will.
But at least this time he wasn't alone. Apparently there was someone with him who was described in all the things, described only as a companion. No one, he doesn't get a name, but he's
that's
some dude.
Code word for gay.
No, maybe.
No, seriously.
Oh, this could have been roommate, like a George Michael
companion.
Thing.
Companion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good friend.
In a churchyard? Okay. Okay.
No wonder they got haunted.
Uh-huh.
They were being gay.
I don't understand that. Okay. So, despite this kind of safety in numbers, though, something rose from behind a tombstone. Apparently, it was like human shape and dressed entirely in white. So, what is it going to be? You're going to think,
oh my God,
that's the Hammersmith ghost. So, this is Hammersmith now. This thing had been going on for a while. The thing rushed up close to Thomas, the brewer guy, and apparently put his hand, I think from behind, put his hand around him and clutched his throat and squeezed. It seems like his companion was ahead of him, walking ahead of him, because that friend turned around. Friend.
Wink,
air
wink.
Quotes. Turned around.
Very special friend.
Very. I guess like heard the sounds of scuffles, turned around, and he sees what's going on. Thomas is being throttled by a ghost. So the ghost then whipped Thomas around like to face him, but when Thomas turned, he saw nothing.
What?
Let's let Thomas tell it. Quote, "The ghost gave me a twist round and I saw nothing. I gave a bit of a push out with my fist and felt something soft like a great coat." End quote. So he didn't, I don't know if he's just too close to see what's going on, but he pushed and he felt like a coat, which you think if this is an impersonator would wear some kind of white blanket, white coat, something like that. I don't know. But he says he didn't actually see anything. Apparently, though, his friend must have, because there was this description that it was this, white clad thing. I mean, that seems to be the end of that story. I don't know what happened to Thomas and his nameless companion. I guess they got the hell out of the cemetery and told people.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, and they asked, what were you two doing in the cemetery?
Alone?
This is 1804. You can be hung for that.
For being gay?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
bad things happened in the 50s and 60s in England for being gay. So I'm going to say they probably never used that scary shortcut again.
Probably,
but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
So just before the end of the year, this is December 29th now, 1803, a night watchman named William Girdler saw the ghost along Beaver Lane. Don't even try to make jokes about that.
It wasn't gonna.
How childish. I thought about several. By this point, the ghost was, been menacing the locals for almost 2 months now. So people were kind of on the lookout. They were even, I think they had started like vigilante groups, roaming the streets by this time. But Girdler was an actual night watchman. So he did his job and he darted after this ghost that was trying to scare him. Or he saw it. I'm not sure if it was like jumped out and booed him, or if he saw it ahead on somewhere up ahead on Beaver Lane, and he chased after it. He didn't get close enough though, and he wasn't able to catch it because apparently the thing threw its white shroud off off its body, and it disappeared. At least according to Girdler, it has disappeared. I suspect maybe he just was exhausted, had a pain in his side, and couldn't keep up. He's a night watchman. A lot of donuts, I'm assuming. Oh. So, sorry, stereotyping.
Lots of donuts.
Let's let him tell his tale as well.
Okay.
He would later tell his tale in cross-examination. The cross-examiner said, "When you pursued it, how did it escape?" Girdler slipped the sheet or tablecloth and then got it over his head. It was just as if his head was in a bag. I don't know what that means.
Okay.
But because it doesn't seem like that at all. Cross-examiner, how long had the neighborhood been alarmed with its appearance? About 6 weeks or 2 months. Was the alarm great and general? Yes, very great.
Great and general.
Had considerable mischief happened from it? Many people were very much frightened, said Girdler. That was the testimony. Rumors of the deeds of the Hammersmith ghost started to grow. And so it was, so some people said, oh, I've seen it like appear instantaneously, just right in front of me. Mm-hmm. I've seen it like it sank into mud. We chased after it and it was able to quickly sink into mud and escape that way. There was a magazine at the time called Kirby's Wonderful and Scientific Museum.
I want to read that.
God, I wish that was still around. It said that the ghost was, quote, so clever and nimble in its retreats that they could never be traced, end quote. So that, like, so he never found footprints. Huh.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, it's possible many of these people never saw the Hammersmith ghost at all.
For sure. Okay. Absolutely. But yeah,
Mom just had to make sure you knew that. Okay.
You're not as dumb as I think you are, right? I don't know, Carrie. If Kirby's Wonderful and Scientific Museum magazine says...
That's one of the most reputable publications.
It's good journalism. I'm just going to say that. Or was. I'm sure it's not. Usually, again, the Hammersmith ghost was clad in like this white shroud or something like that. And also remember the horns and the glass eyes. So others said it morphed into Napoleon Bonaparte.
Oh, sure.
Which was, he was all the rage. This is like the height of his power, 1803, 1804.
Oh.
Others also said they saw eyes that were like glowworms, and still others said it could breathe fire.
Okay.
They just are being, they're telling a story.
That's what's happening
here. They're telling a tale.
Mm-hmm. There's some embellishment going on here. If the name was Tim, would be called Timbellishment. Hi, Tim. Tim was listening. So. Hammersmith, though, had kind of had enough of it by now. So now they start doing the subscription thing, get a bounty put together, and put out armed patrols were formed to go out there and see if they can catch this thing. This is early 1804. This is probably necessary to form these armed patrols because at times the menfolk of the village had not been very helpful. There had been an early incident, as reported by the Morning Post, quote, "The ghost was seen on Monday evening last pursuing a woman who shrieked dreadfully. Although there were four male passengers in the stagecoach, which passed at the time, not one durst venture to the rescue of the distressed female," end quote. So four dudes see this woman screaming, being chased by a ghost. Four dudes do absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So,
Super solid guys.
Yeah, they are. Very reliable. This was also necessary to form these kind of vigilante groups because there was no police at this time, as you probably know. There was maybe a night watchman. There's no such thing as an organized police force yet. The first would be in London, think 30 or 40 years later. But night watchmen weren't police. They literally, their main job was to call out the time every hour. It's 10 o'clock and all's well. That's legit. They literally did that.
Okay.
It was mainly partly so you knew what time it was. Like because these people, they're working late all the time. So like in your shoe shop. Oh, it's 10 o'clock. Oh,
I better go home.
I better go home. It's 10 o'clock.
That's what people were out doing.
That's
he had to walk home from
people
the shoe shop.
Traditional 9 to 5.
I guess. It's terrible. The hours were just awful. So there was a 10-pound bounty in this case in 1804. 10 pounds. Might be $7 trillion.
Yeah. $600 million.
It's a lot of money.
$1 trillion.
They put that on the head of this ghost, and so it's clear that since there was a bounty, some people thought it was a prankster, a ghost hunt hoaxer. Again, a lot of people though thought it was a real ghost.
It had already resulted in deaths of two people. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know when exactly. But yeah, I think it presumably had. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, yeah, it should be taken seriously.
Yeah, it was. And one of the persons who took it very seriously was a 29-year-old excise officer named Francis Smith in Hammersmith. He was sick of the boorish behavior of whoever he thought was putting on a sheet and terrifying his neighbors. So he was in the camp of, this is a person, it's a ghost hoaxer. I'm going to help get this guy. Maybe I'll get 10 pounds yeah. too. But at the very least, I am really tired of this person scaring my people here in Hammersmith. So with this motivation, he volunteered to go on a watch on the night of January 3, 1804 now.
Okay.
And he had a shotgun with him. Sometimes called a fowling gun. I think it shot buckshot, though. It was effectively what we now call a shotgun. He also was armed with a few pints of beer at his local pub on that night. But he left his liquid courage.
Yes.
He left there around 10 o'clock or so, his nearby pub, and he went out on his patrol by himself with his shotgun. About 10:30 or so, he ran into the night watchman, William Girdler, from the previous story.
Mm-hmm.
And William Girdler was on Beaver Lane again.
Yes.
And that was the same place that Girdler had chased the ghost.
I think he hung out on Beaver
Lane. I think he
Lane.
Did. He liked to go. Yeah, there might have been. I don't know what's going on with Beaver Lane. I can imagine what it might have been going on. If that was what's going on in Beaver Lane, it was aptly named. But so they get together and they talk. Oh, you're out going for the ghost, right? Yeah, I'm going for the ghost. Okay, well, I'll keep an eye. I want to catch that ghost too, the night watchman said. So he said, hey, let's do this. I have to call out the time at 11 p.m. When I do that, right after I do that, let's meet back here right after 11 on Beaver Lane here in this corner, Beaver and something else.
Okay.
And we'll go out ghost hunting together. Said, sounds like a plan. All right. I've got a stick. You've got a shotgun. Let's do this.
We're actually super set.
The night was pitch black, though. It was like a particularly dark night.
Were
I'm guessing a sliver
lights?
Moon. Oh, no. No, 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 no.
No street lights.
You had stars. No. I mean,
this isn't a city.
Yeah, and like again, this is like,
oh,
remember, this
you're
is like
right,
in
right.
the very outskirts of what it mm-hmm. was London. Kind of a village. There was no street lights, so it was a very dark night. I'm sure he may have had the night watchman maybe
sure,
had a lantern.
Yeah.
But so they said, look, we might not recognize each other as we approach one another. We should have some kind of a code so we know yeah. where each other.
And not a ghost.
Yeah, that would have you know what that would have been a good code. But they settled on, quote, friend, advance, friend.
That's
their
advance.
Secret code. Friend, advance, friend, because obviously they were idiots. Mm. So around about the same time, Thomas Millwood, he was a bricklayer, and he was visiting his parents and his sister at his childhood home on Black Lion Lane, which is not far from Beaver Lane, because back in those times, streets had way better names than we do
mm-hmm.
now. So he's on Black Lion Lane as home, talking to his parents. His parents go to bed. They're old. They're probably in their 40s. And so they go to bed early or sometime after 10 o'clock. And he's up to about 11 o'clock when his sister, her name is Anne, she reminded him that, hey, your wife will soon be leaving wherever the hell she is to walk home. This is because, as I told you, people back there did everything so goddamn late. Where the hell was she that she was walking home at 11 at night? While a ghost was terrorizing
yeah.
the community, he I would like to know.
Off work.
By the way, I looked up January 3rd, 1804. It was a goddamn Tuesday. I'm so
Where
angry.
Where was she working?
I don't know. I don't know if there was work. They just said, so Anne says, oh, you know, your wife, whatever is, I presume she knew her name, mm-hmm. is going to be, you should go escort her home.
Yeah. Maybe she worked at the pub.
She might have worked at the pub. That's possible. Yeah. It doesn't matter, though. This was the circumstances. And so she said, Anne said, you had better go. It is dangerous for your wife to come home by herself. I mean, no shit.
Yeah.
So we mentioned Thomas was a bricklayer. Mm-hmm. Did I mention that?
Mm-hmm.
Bricklayers in those days had a very specific kind of uniform.
Mm.
Thomas's outfit was brand new. I guess I don't know if he got a new outfit or he just started bricklaying, but it was new, spotless, shiny. It consisted of white linen pants.
Oh, bad choice.
A white flannel shirt. I'm sorry, a white flannel waistcoat and a white apron that he wore around him. So white on white,
white on white.
And it was brand new. It was bright white.
Oh, no.
In fact, his appearance in those clothes had already led to one incident that almost ended badly. Thomas and his wife, I think it was his wife, had been out one evening, not long before, it was on a Saturday night, probably out in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And a man and either his wife or a man and two women, stories differ, drove by in their carriage. They peeped Thomas, as the kids say, and the man points at Thomas and yells, there goes the ghost! Thomas did not appreciate this.
No, he was mad.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whoever the ghost was had a bounty on his head, I believe, by this time, and was not well regarded Mm-mm. in Hammersmith. So he told the man that, hey, I'm no more ghost than you are, bro. But he did it in some very choice words. He was instantly angry and borderline violent. He then asked the man if he would like a, quote, punch in the head.
Ah, yes.
The man declined, I imagine. So hearing about the event, I'm probably going home, Thomas's mother-in-law, her name was Phoebe Fulbrook, she goes, okay, you've got to stop wearing that thing outside at night. She's, quote, your clothes look white. Pray do put on your greatcoat that you may not run in any danger, end quote. She was right.
She was right.
So Thomas said, shut up, old lady. I'm going to wear my white anytime I want. So he did wear his white when he went to visit his family, and he did was in that outfit when he left and walked down Black Lion Lane to go escort his wife home. His sister either watched from the doorway or maybe she looked out a window. Again, it's not clear from the differing relations of this, but she just watched, and it's pitch dark, so she didn't see him very long. He kind of just sort of disappears into the dark night. But then not long after, she hears shouting, and she became very concerned. She heard someone shout, quote, damn you, who are you and what are you? Damn you, I'll shoot you, end quote.
Uh-oh.
Anne would testify that this is what she heard, and that the shouter, it turned out, which she didn't know at the time and would later learn, was a man named Francis Smith, the excise man who had turned vigilante ghost hunter. So Smith basically said those things to Thomas as he approached him in his all-white outfit, and he then shot him in the face with his shotgun at very, very close range. As you know, that apparition obviously was Thomas Millwood, the bricklayer. It's unclear either Thomas didn't hear or didn't respond to Smith's shouts. This also will address the timing of those in just a second. So Smith shoots him. He looks down. He sees what he's done. He sees this person. He looks at the body, and he sees his blood everywhere. Ghost probably shouldn't be bleeding, he figures. Mm-hmm. And he looks at the horrific wound. I mean, it was just a horrible wound to his face, to Thomas Millwood's face. And so he takes off to White Hart Pub. He's not trying to flee, though. He's like, oh my God, I just shot a guy. Mm-hmm. Unsurprisingly, who's at the pub? That'd be the night watchman, William Girdler. Remember, they're supposed to meet after 11. I've got to go call the time at 11. Yeah. From 10 to 10:59, you're in the pub, bro.
Yeah.
So William Girdler is dead. In fact, William Girdler said he had heard the gunshot, and he was absolutely unimpressed. He would later say that gunshots were a regular occurrence, quote, every quarter of an hour, almost all night.
Jesus.
Wow. In Hammersmith. In England?
So wait. Yeah.
I'm confused by that.
They weren't thinking they were catching a man doing this dressed as a ghost. They were literally thinking it's going to be a ghost.
Some people thought it was a ghost. Some people thought it was a man. He thought it was a person.
Mm-hmm. Francis
Smith thought it was a person. I'll tell you in a minute what happened to his thought process. Okay. He goes in there. He kind of stammers out, here's what happened. I think I've really hurt somebody. This is bad. He thought he was in a lot of trouble. And so a little group, I think he says, come back with me to Girdlinger. He says, okay. And a little group forms. I think some other people heard the shot. And so a man named John Locke, who lived nearby, and another man named George Stowe, who I assume also lived nearby, kind of gathered this group, and they went back to the body, to Thomas Millwood, which they didn't know was a body yet, that he didn't know he was dead. And they looked at what he had done, and they looked at Smith was just having a breakdown. So they said, go home. Or some versions say a constable came by and arrested him. I don't think that's possible. Some versions say that he was just told to go home and, like, hey, the authorities will look into this and we'll be in touch, kind of a thing. So he did. Meanwhile, Anne and I had left her house not long, of course, after she heard the shouting and the guns shot. I don't know. She went and got a coat, and she went and probably tried to wake her parents, and they wouldn't wake up, because by herself, I don't know if she really tried to wake up her parents. I mean, they're in their 40s. They need their sleep. So she goes out, and she's crying out for Thomas, Thomas, Thomas. Then there's no response from him. And then she stumbles. She gets there, and she stumbles on to Thomas, lying face up on this dirt road of Black Lion Lane. And she looked right away at the brutal wound, but and she said that it was stained black with gunpowder, which tells you how close Smith was when he took the shot. She took his hand and begged him, say something, but she quickly realized that he was dead.
So he would have been able to see his face.
You would think. Again, it's a very dark night, and I don't think he had any kind of a light. So,
oh, that wasn't very smart.
No. But he's, you know, there's enough light where he sees this white outfit, of course. So, and he's English, so his skin was probably extremely white, I'm assuming. So a newspaper called the Caledonian Mercury later reported the terrible event. Quote, "We have to announce to the public an event in some of its circumstances so ludicrous, but in its results so dreadful, that we fear if the reader should even laugh with one side of his mouth, he must of necessity cry with the other," end quote. Because that's how you wrote back then.
Yeah.
Francis Smith is indeed in trouble. He just killed a man. Justice moved very fast in those days, so Francis Smith went on trial for murder 1 week later.
Jesus.
That's how you do it. The trial was at London's now famous Old Bailey courthouse. The question was, could a man who was acting under mistaken sense of circumstance be tried for murder? In other words, he thought this was a ghost or something like that. So he didn't.
I mean, I wouldn't convict him of murder.
The idea was that if Smith had truly believed Millwood was a ghost, then it would sort of present something like a self-defense plea, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's on trial for murder. So they did charge him with willful murder.
Wow.
So the court.
I also wouldn't let him off with self-defense. It's not self-defense, but okay, continue.
You'll see how that, the jury, you'll see. So the court heard from Anne, which really, she's kind of the only ear witness to this. She's really the only witness to this, because otherwise it's just the two men. That was Thomas's sister, as you know. She testified that the shot had been fired almost immediately after Francis Smith had shouted his warning at her brother. She felt that Thomas had absolutely no time to explain himself or to surrender, whatever Francis Smith wanted him to do. Smith, for his part, was just in a terrible shape. He was clearly distressed. He was very remorseful. Yeah. Witnesses said he spent the entire trial looking just mortified. He couldn't barely stand under his own power. When he went to his own testimony, his own defense, he was like mumbling and stammering. He could barely speak. One observer said, quote, "The pallid hue of his countenance." Yeah, he means countenance. It's literally written like multiple continents, like South American. During the whole trial, together with the signs of contrition which he exhibited, commanded the sympathy of every spectator. So people are feeling badly for him. Smith said that when he called out to this white thing in front of him that had, again, suddenly appeared, he's in the lane, this white thing suddenly appears, all these stories about the Hammersmith ghost are going through his head, that he became instantly just terrified. So he shouts, he threatens, he has the gun already pointed at him. And when the thing did not respond, this once skeptic of the ghost said he suddenly felt he was confronted by an actual ghost. And he was just in sheer panic, and he fired the gun out of sheer panic.
He was not equipped to be doing the job
for sure.
He went out to do then.
Yeah.
Yes, that's for sure. By the way, no one has mentioned at this point that if you really think you're hunting a ghost, why do you have a gun? What do you think a gun is going to do for an actual ghost? But that was essentially Smith's attempt at self-defense. He had acted under delusion, yes, but he had acted in good faith, and he therefore was not a murderer. Smith also claimed that he had warned the apparition twice and that he felt he had given time for a response.
Yeah.
And that not this apparition, this thing in front of him, didn't say a word and kept approaching him, according to Francis Smith. And that's when he fired that lethal shot. Of course, it's only his word. It was just Smith and Millwood out there on Black Lion Lane that night. And of course, Millwood by this time was a real ghost, so he couldn't testify. Phoebe Fulbrook, she was Millwood's mother-in-law. She was brought in to testify about the whole, "I warned him not to wear that white outside," which I'm not sure what the point of that was, but they brought her in to testify. And that was kind of it. It didn't last more than the day. So Lord Chief Justice Baron Sir Archibald MacDonald. Lord Chief Justice Baron Sir Archibald MacDonald. I can't even.
That's ridiculous.
I can't say that. That was his name. I'm going to call him McDonald. He wrapped up the trial, with his instructions to the jury. English judges have tremendous leeway to inform the jury and kind of steer them toward what they think is important, what they think is not important, what the evidence means. They still do to this day, as we'll find out after Halloween in a later multi-part episode of Weird World, how judges still have tremendous power to influence a jury.
Okay.
And McDonald was very clear in his instructions. He told them that actual malice was not necessary to commit murder. You merely had to intend to kill. So it's not like manslaughter. There's no intent. Mm-hmm. Quote, "I should betray my duty and injure the public security if I did not persist in asserting that this is a clear case of murder. If the facts be proved to your satisfaction, all killing whatever amounts to murder, unless justified by the law, are in self-defense." I think the law, he means manslaughter.
Right.
"In cases of some involuntary acts or some sufficiently violent provocation, it becomes manslaughter. Not one of these circumstances occur here," end quote. So he's telling them, you know, this is murder.
Yeah.
Millward had not attacked Smith, he said. He had not threatened him in any way. And he also felt that he had not been given a chance to explain himself. So he agreed with Anne, the sister. Instead of catching the ghost, remember, Smith was out there to catch a ghost, not to kill a ghost. Smith had fired, you know, first that night. And it also clearly was not an accident.
I mean, the judge maybe changed my mind.
And so, well, yeah. He basically said, under these circumstances, this can't be self-defense. This can't be manslaughter, you know, ... to the jury.
Yeah.
The jury deliberated for 1 hour and they came back with a guilty verdict of manslaughter.
Oh.
The judge was not happy about that. I mean, obviously they're eager at this point to, they want to punish Smith to some degree, it seems like, but not for murder, which in those days was a certain death sentence.
Yeah.
So Judge McDonald was having none of it.
Uh-oh. Is he going to nullify the jury?
Not exactly. He told the jury, quote, "The court could not receive such a verdict." He basically said, nope.
Then why have a jury?
Yeah, that defeats the point.
The charge was murder. And he told him, look, he's either guilty of murder or you have to acquit him of murder. That's the only two choices you have. It mattered not one whit that Smith believed Millward was a ghost. He'd killed him. Go back to that jury room and you decide he's guilty or not guilty of murder. That's it. So they did. They went back to the jury room and they came back in like minutes with a verdict of...
not guilty.
Acquitted, yeah.
Guilty of murder.
Oh, no.
Wow, you guys are invested. I like that. So Judge McDonald donned his black cap, as they did back then. They literally put on like a black cloth kind of a thing on their head when they give sentence of in a capital case. And so he sentenced him to really the only sentence that the law kind of allowed him to give, which was Francis Smith would be hanged until dead and his body would be delivered to a medical college for dissection.
Oh,
this is back in those days. Where death and dissection was the common end of every murderer in 1804 England is because the medical colleges couldn't dissect anybody else except people who were killed by law, who were executed.
They didn't have wonderful people like me donating their bodies for science.
Oh, my God.
She brings it up whenever she can.
She really does. She squeezes in how she's going to put her body in her body for. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not virtue signaling much, am I? I guess I am. Maybe I am. So the time of the sentence was to be carried out Monday. Monday, 6 days away in this case, because as I mentioned, justice was very speedy in those days. Smith, he went into hysterics. He started sobbing.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I would too.
Sure. He had to be helped from the room physically. He was like being half dragged out of the room and he was taken to Newgate Prison. And as the Newgate Calendar, apparently a publication of some sort, put it, quote, "When the dreadful word guilty was pronounced, Smith sank into a state of stupefaction exceeding despair," end quote.
Stupefaction.
Okay. Stupefaction. He was stupefied. So probably sensing the community reaction or what the community reaction might be, and also I think not without sympathy, Judge McDonald immediately reported the case to the king, King George III. He said, basically, I'm going to send this up to the king like right now, and knowing that the king, of course, had the power to commute death sentences.
Yeah.
By 7 p.m. that night, King George III had commuted the sentence to prison at His Majesty's pleasure.
Okay.
Meaning, he's not gonna hang, but he'll be in prison until I say he shouldn't be in prison anymore.
Right.
Essentially. Not long after that, his sentence was commuted to 1 year's hard labor.
Wow.
On July 14th, that is to say, I think not even 6 months later, Francis Smith was given a full pardon and sent home from Newgate Prison. So he actually only spent about 6 months in jail or so. And given that, he was kind of a wuss with his whole hysterics, and he had to be held walking. At least walk under your own power, Francis. I mean, first of all, Francis, okay? Never mind. Yeah. So, what?
Are you being mean about his name?
I am, kind of, yeah.
That's not nice,
I'm
Dean.
I'm name-bullying. Oh, God, I mean, Francis was that hurt.
A fine name.
I like Francis.
I mean, I like Francis now.
Okay. I wonder who this Francis is, but okay.
I think we should bring it back. Okay. Emma, firstborn son, Francis.
Francis.
Hell no.
Okay, well, you were just... Okay, now who's name bullying?
I don't want to name my kid Francis, but it doesn't mean I'm judging them.
Why are we talking about Francis? Let's stop doing that. The question of self-defense under this color of mistaken belief was not fully settled in English law until 1984. It's 180 years later. You still have this out there. People could say, okay, I didn't... I was under some kind of mistaken belief, right? A man named Gladstone Williams in 1983, he had seen another man dragging a younger man violently across a street. He thought an assault was going on, that this person's attacking this older man, he thought that this older man was attacking this young man, an assault was going on, and so he confronted and, I guess, injured the guy. He attacked the man doing the dragging.
Wow.
We'll call him the dragging man.
The dragging man.
And he injured him. I don't know. Apparently serious enough that he was charged with assault in a court. And because it turned out that the young man was a thief. Mm-hmm. He just robbed that guy's store. And that guy had captured him and was bringing him to a cop to turn him over to the police.
Right.
That's so, like something that happens in the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happened here. So Williams, Gladstone Williams, by the way, another great name.
Dope name.
Was convicted of assault. Now, without going into the legal reasoning, I don't have time, but eventually his conviction was quashed. They basically said, yeah, no, in this case, he wasn't acting. He was acting in good faith, apparently.
Yeah.
And so he got out of it. So what happened that day, that time, back in 1803, 1804, to the actual Hammersmith ghost? Was there an actual Hammersmith ghost that terrified this town so badly it eventually cost an innocent man his life? The obvious answer to this is it's a real ghost. I mean, obviously. Is that what you're going to say? I'm assuming that's what you're going to say.
Of course. That's just plain as day.
There had to be a ghost. Probably that guy who slit his throat and was buried in the church.
Probably, yes.
It was probably Judge McDonald.
Damn it. I never thought about that.
And that's why he fell guilty and got his sentence.
Wow. You're a conspiracy theorist.
that's a deep cut.
That is deep. Okay. If it wasn't the guy who killed himself and is a real ghost, most people believe, though, that it was not just a person. It was more than one person. If the number of incidents is even close to the actual, I'm sure some were.
Yeah.
It seems like it was a lot of people. Maybe a copycat. Yes. Maybe copycats were doing this kind of thing.
It was hooligans.
Yeah. Probably hooligans. You're right. Mm-hmm. Larrikins, as they'd say in Australia, at least in the 19th century. I don't know. But what was the spark? If there was copycats, what started it? That question was actually answered way back in 1804. In fact, pretty much right after the trial.
Really?
Yeah. Feeling just awful about what had happened to Thomas Millwood and to Francis Smith. Thomas Millwood was dead. Francis Smith was going to jail.
Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about the two women that died?
Nah.
No, Mom, they're women, remember?
They're women, Carrie. They were hysterics. It was hysterics. That's why they had hysterectomies. I don't know what that means.
It was somehow their fault.
It was for sure their fault. Obviously. In some way. I mean, clearly. I mean,
if
Jesus
you can't
Christ.
Tell, we're being facetious.
Well, you are.
Hey.
Whoa.
Good Lord, Carrie.
She just called you.
She did, and that's terrible, and it's wrong. So this local shoemaker named John Graham turned himself in to the authorities.
What?
It's not as bad as it seems. So he explained that his shoemaker's apprentice, had gotten into the habit of terrifying his small children by telling them spooky ghost stories.
Oh.
So he said, I'm going to get back at apprentice, we'll call him Bob.
Okay.
I'm going to get back at Bob. I'm going to teach him a lesson. So John Graham put on a white blanket and went out to scare him on the street somewhere, like maybe on the way to or from his house, whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you going home? Okay, I got to go. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow.
You know, he's like, boo, jumps out and he scares him. Well, he was seen by the apprentice. He was also seen by, apparently that incident may have been seen by William Girdler. Mm. He may have been the person who Girdler chased and threw off his shroud. It's not clear. In this case, he said it's a white blanket. And Graham said that he only did this one time, but it's possible he was trying to make himself look a little better. He had done it a few more times, but it's also certainty that other people took advantage of this and started doing copycat crimes of this kind. So it turns out that Graham was arrested and charged with being a nuisance. But there's no word of him being punished. So apparently he was like, okay, you were kind of a dick, did cost a guy's life, but you rascal, go on.
Well,
you told the truth. Good job.
You did. God damn it.
He probably didn't do it over and over.
There was
again,
no malice. I don't think he did it very often. Yeah. Maybe it would be hard. If the apprentice was really scared the first time, yeah, you'd probably do it one more time.
Yeah.
The incident of Ghost, the Hammersmith Ghost, died right after he made his confession, obviously.
Well, yeah.
The trial and the murder. You know, I might get shot. I'm going to stop doing that. So yeah, there was no more. But that was not completely the end of the Hammersmith, or at least Ghost in Hammersmith. 20 years later, in 1824, there were renewed reports of a ghost prowling around the lanes of Hammersmith. This time, though, the locals felt that they knew exactly who the ghost was. It wasn't the guy who slit his throat with the straight razor. Mm-hmm. They felt this ghost was one and only the angry ghost of Thomas Millward. Still wearing his white linen trousers, his white waistcoat, and his white apron.
Yeah.
I like to think it was.
Does it come back every 20 years? Is that the legend?
That'd be cool. You know what? We're going to start that right now. Yes, Carrie, he does. Thomas Millward haunts the lanes of now urban Hammersmith.
Yes.
In the middle, the heart of West London.
Because this year would be the year.
If you are in London right now, you need to see, I'm putting air quotes, the ghost. If you're in Hammersmith, you need to see the ghost of Thomas Millward.
Watch out. Mm-hmm. He is coming.
And if you don't see him, see him?
See
I
him.
Think you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Wink, a wink.
Mm-hmm. Put it on our social media and anybody else's too.
Yeah.
So that is the story of the Hammersmith ghost, the ghost hunting days of Hammersmith. It ended in tragedy, but nothing
what?
Else. It just pretty much ended in tragedy. Bad. It was pretty terrible all around. How are people not dressing up as ghosts anymore? I don't think people dress up as ghosts anymore, do they, in Halloween?
No.
It's too bad. In our day, people still do that. Not very often. It was like the lazy way, and you had to ruin a sheet.
Because
you had to cut eye holes out of it, but it was
people don't really do ghosts. If they do, it's like an avant-garde, like
artist
interpretation of a ghost.
Like a chain or something like that, or it's Beetlejuice, maybe.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Halloween is like, it's a big deal when you're an adult still.
Yeah.
You've got to have a cool costume that's niche, but not too niche that no one knows what you are. It has to be creative, but not so creative that, you know, you're doing too much. It has to be sexy, but not too sexy. Has to be a lot of things. You have to hit a lot of marks.
And also ghosts. Now don't look like that.
No.
No, they
like,
don't.
A la Beetlejuice.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be a character, you'd be a reference to something.
Yeah.
If you are going to do a lazy costume, it's witch or vampire or...
I thought it's just like...
Something like that.
A t-shirt that says this is my Halloween costume or something stupid like that.
Or, you know, you buy something from...
Zombie.
Spirit Store.
The Spirit Halloween Store.
Spirit Store. Yeah, which is overpriced and you'll never wear again. But still go out and do it.
Yeah.
I support the store.
I was Freddy Krueger last year and everybody ate that up. They loved it.
So you're game for going out and trick-or-treating?
And we'll be Freddy Krueger again.
We'll wait at the sidewalk?
Yeah, sure.
I really want to do that, but it's fine. Even just like two houses. I don't even care. So that's the story.
You'll have to go 18 blocks to find two houses that are actually
Nobody trick-or-treats anymore. It's really sad.
That is terrible.
It's just us.
Damn it.
People don't trick or treat like that.
That is more than you think.
Last year, we gave out full size candy bars.
We did.
Yeah.
We gave out a lot of candy last year. So there's a fair amount out. Especially if we got out full size candy. Full size Milky Way.
Guys, get over it.
Oh my God. Kit Kats.
I'm Sarah Full Dress on the podcast.
Four pieces of the Kit Kat. Get them. All right. Thank you.
Very
that starts
cool.
Weird World. First episode, we'll bring you many more spooky tales the rest of the month.
Not that many
more. Well,
several. Wow, Carrie, what is that?
She said not that many.
It's Halloween Weird World, Carrie. Celebrate it. It's our favorite month of the year, goddammit. All right.
Okay.
See you next time.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.